This is James Corbett of The Corbett Report. Today is the 15th of April, 2011, and today we are talking with everyone's favorite retired silver and gold stockbroker slash publisher of the world's leading biweekly newsletter devoted to all things financial, economic, social, and political. I am, of course, talking of none other than the irrepressible Bob Chapman of The International Forecaster at theinternationalforecaster.com. Bob Chapman, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. It's a joy to be on your program. It's one of my favorites, and I hope it continues.
Well, I certainly hope that you've been keeping yourself well over the last couple of months. It has been a while since we've last talked, and there, of course, a lot of incredible information and news coming out on a daily basis. So actually, I wanted to start today with a story that just came out last week, the 4th of April, and we'll take it from Infowars.com. White House threats on Wayne Madsen must be taken seriously. And it says, quote, "In yet another indication that America's democratic experiment is a thing of the past, this editor," meaning Wayne Madsen, "has received word from a source in a foreign intelligence agency allied with the United States that there has been talk by some within the Obama White House that this editor, Wayne Madsen, is under threat. What particular stories have inflamed the White House are not known, but the warning conveyed by the source, who has connections within the White House, was stark in its directness. They want to kill you. It was perfectly clear that the phrase was not being used as a figure of speech," end quote. So, Mr. Bob Chapman, I'm not sure to what extent you're familiar with Wayne Madsen personally, but I'm sure you are familiar with his work, and I know you can certainly relate to this experience, as you yourself were run out of globalist-occupied American empire by the shenanigans of various people and forces that couldn't bear to have you in the same country. So, from your own perspective and experience, what's your take on this story?
Well, out of hand, I believe him. He's a good journalist. I read him. I like his work. And yes, it's not only him. There are a few others who get to the point and include in what they write the background. And there's very few writers that do that. The background being is who's really behind this and what are they doing and what are their goals. And Wayne and Webster Tarpley, myself, Max Kaiser, Paul Craig Roberts, there's a few people who get into that venue and they just send these people, not only in Washington, but in New York and London, ballistic. And they don't want anybody to know what they're doing. And the talk radio programs, as well as the internet, has changed all that over the past 15 or 20 years. And we're breathing down their neck. And they're terrified. They're not going to tell you that, but they are, and that's why you have off-the-hand statements like that, you know, we got to get rid of this guy, in the case of Wayne. I believe it. I've gone through it myself, and it's interesting. I always get more threats when when the Republicans were in office than the Democrats, and be as it may, it's not only threats. There were other things that happened along the way to me, such as trying to destroy my business. I owned a stock brokerage firm, but the possibility of payoffs to keep it from happening. It's been an incredible journey. Back in 1967, when I started writing and being active in what I'm active in today, telling people the truth, I started to get threats from the government, different agencies, but they weren't threats. What they were in those days, stop. And I didn't. And they got more aggressive. I had people who we caught trying to put explosives in our house, not to blow it up, but they were illegal. And so what they intended to do is plant them and have somebody come and find them, and then put me away. And I've been threatened at gunpoint by organizations, and that was a mistake on their part, because I was always armed when I lived in the United States, legal or illegal. And it was a good thing, too, because I had to use weapons several times. And it's a good thing I'm good with them, or I wouldn't be here talking to you. But I believe it, and I've gone through it, and the last time I was threatened was almost 10 years ago. And that's the last time I step foot in the United States, and I probably never will unless things change dramatically.
Well, let's hope that it does, but obviously we can't just hope. We have to work towards that, and that's what we're doing, and that's what people like Wayne Madsen and others in the alternative media are doing. But it does raise the question of why some people get singled out for this type of treatment, and why certain stories seem to arouse the ire of the powers that be more than others, and you know, why Wayne Madsen and why not someone like Webster Tarpley or Paul Craig Roberts at this point?
Well, I think in Madsen's case, that he's been a very, very visible thorn in their side for a long time. And myself, I have not been as visible except perhaps in the last 10 years or so. Usually they didn't like what I was doing because not only was I talking about what they were doing, but I also was doing other things they didn't want me to do, which I won't go into. And at times, they try to recruit me to work with them, and I wouldn't. And I think one of the underlying reasons why they bore down on me more than they would others is I was trained by them, and they didn't like that idea. And even some of the people they used to harass me and pull these dirty tricks, in those days, I had the ability, once I knew who the person was, of tracking down who he was. And these are people who work for the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI, usually not as permanent employees as contract employees. And that gives them plausible denial. But that sort of thing went on for a long, long time. And I've probably been harassed more than anybody, except perhaps Bill Cooper. And the last time I was warned, I knew it was the last time I'd be in the United States.
And you're saying that was about 10 years ago?
9 to be exact.
Mm. So that would have been shortly after Bill Cooper met his untimely demise as well, at the hands
That's
of
right.
the authorities.
Right. And I wasn't going to hang around, because these people are serious.
Well, certainly they are, and I do take these types of things seriously, because we have seen person after person get suicided or to get involved in accidents of various kinds, or you know, have their business or their reputation destroyed, and we know exactly how this type of thing can be done, and it has been done numerous times, so it is certainly serious. But it also, I would want to caution the listeners out there, because I think this type of story sometimes is also used to try to suppress dissent, and as you say, we are breathing on their necks, and we are exposing what they're doing, and they do hate that. They hate the freedom that the internet has and is bringing to people who are being able to get this word out to so many people, and a chilling effect can be done with this type of thing. And a lot of people think that as soon as you start talking about 9/11 as an inside job or something, there's going to be, you know, men in black helicopters circling over your house. But it's absolutely not the case, and I think people shouldn't get too scared about themselves personally to the point where they don't act on the information.
Well, the average person, even if they're outspoken, doesn't have a problem. I've been involved in lots of things that nobody even knows about, and not in recent years, but previously. And I knew lots about what the government was doing, and that's because they tried to recruit me. And this goes back into the mid-1960s. And I think besides Cooper and perhaps a few other people, I probably have been harassed more than anybody else. But, you know, I do take notice of what they have to say and try to stay out of harm's way. But it's not easy. And they haven't bothered me lately. More than anything else, they tried to destroy me financially, and they were totally unsuccessful.
Absolutely, and I guess they didn't know who they were dealing with, but on that note, I mean...
Well, they did. That was a problem.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Well, on that note, I mean, you say that you have to take into account what's being said and try to stay out of harm's way to the extent possible, and I certainly agree with that. And you look at things like in the anthrax attacks back in the wake of 9/11, one of the organizations that got sent the anthrax was the company that published some of the photos of Bush's daughters out for a drunken night when they were still underage and things like that. And I think there's no doubt that there was a connection there, and there's obviously a message being sent to certain people and certain things, and I think it is important to weigh the information you're bringing versus the importance of bringing it to the people, if you know what I'm saying, in terms of bringing people's wives and things into the debate and things like that, which of course steps over a line. But you've been around at this for decades. What are some of the things that you've seen over the decades that have been interesting in this respect?
Not a lot, but I came across a lot of information. Most people don't know it, but during the mid-1960s, the United States government was going to go back into Cuba again. And they tried to recruit me, because they didn't want to do this themselves, to accumulate munitions for them, for the most part, weapons. And I knew people quite well who were in the anti-Castro movement, and they held important positions. And I decided they didn't want to do that, and they weren't very happy about it. And that's kind of what got the ball rolling. And Portugas at that time was operating with those groups, and he had been in the same outfit I was in counterintelligence prior to this happening. And they probably figured, well, Portugas, we recruited, and he's doing pretty good, so maybe this guy Chapman will too, you know? And but I disappointed them. And that's when the trouble began. And it's never stopped.
That's right. Well, let's flesh that out for people who might not know who Porter Goss is. But of course, he was the last director of the Central Intelligence and the first director of the CIA following the 2004 Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act. And he was also, of course, I never miss an opportunity to talk about it. He was also breakfasting with General Mahmoud Ahmed of the Pakistani ISI on the morning of 9/11. And of course, it was General Mahmoud Ahmed that the FBI traced $100,000 that went to lead alleged 9/11 hijacker Mohammed Atta in the weeks leading up to 9/11. And he just happened to be having a breakfast meeting with Porter Goss and Bob Graham on the morning of 9/11, and those were the two guys that would eventually head up the official House and Senate inquiry into 9/11. So just a very interesting and connected person.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because he obviously was very involved, and he was probably part of that operation. But one time they said to me something about him, and I said, "You got to be kidding me. I'm far better than he is." And so maybe I shouldn't have said that. And the respect that they wanted me even more, and that didn't work out for them.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, I'm always open to any stories you have of your colorful past whenever you want to bring them up on the program, because it's incredibly interesting and incredibly important to get this out and documented for future generations, because you know, we won't be here forever, but these words may resound for as long as people can still access them freely. And it's important to get this on the record, because there is a real historical record that's being undermined as the winners of history rewrite the history books and try to make themselves sound like great people, when we know that a lot of them aren't.
Well, that's right. And but I'm very judicious as to what I do, because I'm very healthy, and I would think that I could probably publish for another 10 years. So I don't want to meet a premature demise by saying too much. I was on a program last night, and the question came up. There was a chief of police there, and the moderator asked the chief of police about the court system. And he thought for a minute and he said, well, it can at times be too political. And I said something. I said, we should cut off this debate. And I said, the reason why is we don't want this man to lose his job or his life. You got to be very careful what you say.
There's absolutely no doubt about that. I agree wholeheartedly.
I'd rather talk about the old days like I was yesterday, talking about my relations with the Kennedy family and that sort of thing. But that's somewhat harmless at this point. They don't think they'll ever get caught for what they did.
The Kennedys?
Mm-hmm. History will know. It'll come out, but they won't care. They'll all be deceased.
Okay, well, you're halfway out with the story there. If you want to leave it halfway suspended, that's fine. Or if you'd like to
continue. Yeah, no, I'll leave it there.
Okay,
because, that's fine. We got more important things to talk about.
We certainly do. But just for the record, let's just stop it here because, again, this is serious and we are talking about serious things. And I'd just like you to state for the record once again that you have absolutely no intention of killing yourself anytime soon.
I don't have that kind of a personality. It would be absolutely impossible for me to do such a thing.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. It's absolutely black and white. And for myself as well, I have absolutely no intention to shuffle off this mortal coil anytime in the near future. And I certainly would never do it by my own hand. So it's on the record there. All right, well, let's move on to different and more recent news. Obviously, we have not talked for a while, and in that intervening time, some incredible things have been happening in Japan. So perhaps you can talk a little bit about what the economic ramifications of the tsunami and all of the nuclear kerfuffle might be in the long run for the land of the rising sun.
Well, first of all, I have great respect for the Japanese people, particularly in their ability and their steadfastness in being productive people. And I'm hoping that within 6 months' time, they'll be able to resurrect what has to be resurrected. And I'm sure that they're trying to begin to do that now. I think the question is money. And the pool that they've been using to create debt has been the Postal Savings Plan, which is a retirement type of plan for Japanese people. That plan has been going down, the money within it, because people are retiring. The first wave, you might say, like people my age, 75, were born and survived the war. They were born in the 1930s and survived the war. And even people who were born during the war, you know, they're taking their money out and they're using it. And that's understandable. But anyway, that's where I think they'll go to probably get about $300 billion. And they'll do it in the form of bonds, which is just paper shuffling. Second of all, I think they might be forced to go into the international market and sell yen-denominated bonds, and they'll have no trouble doing that because they have very little external debt. Yes, their debt-to-GDP ratio is about 250 to 1, but it's internal, it's domestic debt, and there's a big difference. I think the number that they've given us, $309 billion to fix everything up, is optimistic. I'm looking for $500 billion to $1 trillion. We'll middle the thing at $700 billion. So if they do, say $200 for each of those entities, they'll have $400, and they can sell of their $880 billion in treasuries, U.S. treasuries. They could sell $300 billion, and of course that's the last thing that they want to do. They don't want to erode the value of the dollar. Chinese are in the same position. And at the same time, they have to have the money. So recently, 2 weeks ago, the Group of Seven decided they were going to assist the Japanese by making the yen weaker. And the yen went down in value from 75 to the dollar to 86. So that was a substantial reduction in the value of the yen versus the dollar. It's 84 right now, more or less. But I suspect during that period of a week that the G7 decided they were going to take down some U.S. treasuries. And I don't know that the Federal Reserve was involved as a buyer, but the other six were. And I think what the Fed would have done in a situation like that was guarantee them against loss. And that would have kept them happy. So I think they, and this is a guess, if they did that, and I believe they did, the number would be about $50 billion. That's my guess. That's very doable. And with that said, they may have $250 billion to go. And they're going to have to continue doing it that way, or they'll knock down the value of the dollar, and nobody wants that. The dollar's weak enough as it is. But I think that's a route they'll take. I'm hoping that their ability to start supplying parts again will come within 3 to 6 months. I don't know the details. I'm guessing, but I know the Japanese people, and I know they're perfectly capable of doing something like that. As far as the consequences of the fallout from the accident caused by the earthquake at the nuclear facilities, we probably have radiation all over the world. And it's probably quite dense close to that area, probably within 50 to 70 miles. And how that's going to work out, I don't know. Can they still work there? I don't know. Can they use the plants there? I don't know. Will they use plants someplace else? Maybe. And so on. And so there's a lot of questions unanswered. But I'm optimistic about that. You know, people say, well, it's going to be terrible, and that's going to affect the U.S. stock market and other markets. And that's possible. But I don't think it's totally probable. There'll be discomfort, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as some people paint it. I hate to see people being sensationalistic about this sort of thing, because there's a lot at stake. And there's another factor, too, in the U.S. stock market. That could be a negative. Lower earnings are going to be a negative the second half of the year, and maybe even in the second quarter. But I'm looking for 2 to 2.5% growth in the GDP in the U.S. economy, and everybody else is looking for 4 to 4.5, and they're starting to change now because they didn't see what I saw. But the ace in the hole in the market has been, and may very well continue to be, the injection of funds by the Federal Reserve. Presently, contrary to what you're told, the fee is not $600 billion. To purchase treasuries with money from out of thin air. The figure is $900 billion. And as you know, Congress in December okayed $862 billion. So 9 and 6 is 15, so that's $1.5, almost $1.6 trillion. I think the Fed is going to add to that, and I think they're going to have a QE3. But they're certainly not going to call it that. But there's nobody to buy the paper being generated and the rollover paper being generated by the U.S. Treasury. The Fed right now is buying about 83% of treasuries and agencies, Fannie, Freddie, Ginny, FHA bonds. And if they stop buying, who's going to buy? So they got to keep on buying. I mean, it's a simple, logical conclusion. It's not difficult. And you hear all this folderol from both sides on the Federal Reserve presidencies and the 12 banks. But believe me, unless they want a deflationary depression, they better keep on doing what they're doing. And of course, the flip side of that is higher inflation, 14% this year. And I may be conservative on that, 25% next year for QE2 and stimulus 2. And if they go ahead with something like a QE3 for, say, $2.5, $3 trillion, and that's what it'll cost them, you might be looking at 50% inflation, which is called hyperinflation. And that would be 2.5 to 3 years down the line. And so that's what they're stuck with. It's intractable. There's no way out. And for those of you who want to protect yourself, you should be in gold and silver-related assets. Those of you who are much more sophisticated can do that and also go in the commodity market. But I do not recommend that for the average person.
Well, you do have a great article up on the internationalforecaster.com right now called Nobody is Smarter Than the Markets that came out on April 13th, and it's about gold and silver and why it continues to be the best investment. So I suggest people can read that. But going back to QE3 for a moment, how do you imagine that would be implemented? How big will it have to be, and when will it start?
2.5 to 3 trillion if they get no help from Congress. And I don't see them getting any help because they're trying to cut. And the cuts that they're making, they're an insult to anybody with any intelligence whatsoever. I mean, I can't imagine a $1.6 or $1.7 trillion deficit and the real number that's being deducted in the reduction of deficit is something like $600 million when you boil it all down. It's disgraceful. And they're going to do the same thing leading up to July. And in September, they'll play the same game again. They have to re-extend the cash deficit from now it's 14.3. I don't know what the new figure is, but it'll be followed again. They're trapped. They created this thing, and the only way they can get out is to have a major war.
That is absolutely the way that things have been heading for a long time, and we've seen moves towards that, of course, recently with the recent so-called spontaneous uprisings in the Arab world. But it does strike me that the ridiculous nature of the so-called budget cuts talks that have been going on, it seems to me that even the politicians are not even really putting up a pretense that this is anything more than a political show at this point.
And that's correct. And that's dreadful for the credit rating of the United States, which means it'll have to be lowered. And that might happen this summer. And the continual drag on the economy caused by debt, it's not only the debt of the federal government. You got municipalities, many of which will go bankrupt this year. You have states, and I don't know what they're going to do. They're just probably go into default because they're not allowed to go bankrupt unless there's legislation. And you have corporate debt that's been expanding, even though they have a lot of cash. And individual debt is up slightly. Nothing to write home. I think the figure is 0.6% or something like that. The public's gotten their act together. They got their savings up to 7 to 8% area. And it had been zero for a long time, or minus. And it dropped back down to plus four during the November-December period for Christmas and holidays. And now they built it back up again. And so the public sees what's going on, and they're trying to be more conservative and get out of debt, not incur new debt, have some savings. And but that's the way the financial picture is. I mean, you've got a financial picture in England that's worse, and you've got one in Europe that's probably about the same. And, you know, we could spend a whole hour talking about the other entities as well as the United States and the economic and financial problems that they have. the best thing really for them to do, if they want to stop all this, and that could stop it, and that is a meeting, revaluation, devaluation of the currencies, multilateral debt default, and then choosing a new world reserve currency or unit. It could be the dollar. It could be a combination of 10 currencies. We don't know. On the other hand, the meeting may never happen. We may have another war. If we attack Iran with Israel, I can promise you China's going to get into it. And if China does, Russia will. And it'll be pretty nasty. And nobody will be worrying about anything financial or economic. They'll be worrying if they're going to lie, be alive.
And along those exact lines, people might want to tune into my last episode of my podcast where I went through the whole Arab Spring and how this is perhaps just a manipulation of the grand chessboard towards encirclement of China and Russia, and how this is being manipulated into a greater stratagem to maneuver the world into World War III, which of course would benefit to the people who are manipulating the financial system and trying to keep people's eyes off of the ball. And war has been the way that the globalists have done it for a long time, and will no doubt continue to do it because it works, unfortunately, for them, I should say, certainly not for the people. Well, a very, very sobering assessment, but along those exact lines, of course, as you well know, and as I'm sure many listeners know, there was just the Bretton Woods II, so-called, held by Soros and Gordon Brown and Paul Volcker and the usual gaggle of globalists in New Hampshire. Any intel on what came out of that, or was that also for political show?
It was a political show. It was a vacation for the weekend at the the hotel where they had the Bretton Woods conference. I'd been there when I was a kid. I used to go to camp for 2 or 3 years, not too far from there. So we used to climb Mount Washington. And the last time I did that, we got to the top, to the hotel. It was smaller than it is now. And it started snowing unbelievably. I mean, this is in August, and so we all get inside. There was about 20 of us get inside the hotel at the entrance so that we didn't have to stand out there. And as soon as the snow let up, we bolted and ran down the mountain as best we could. And the further down we went, the less snow we had. But anyway, it was a showpiece. The academics we're all congratulating each other. These are the people who, for the most part, never enter the real world. And Larry Summers was there, but there were no big hitters there. And that had to tell you that it was smoke and mirrors. Soros, and this is very important, after that, he came out and attacked G. Edward Griffin, who had been on Glenn Beck's show just before Glenn Beck was terminated by Fox. And I can't help but think that was the final straw for Fox with him, Beck. But anyway, Soros had a litany on G. Edward Griffin about what a useless character he was. And I fear now for his life. Ed and I have been friends since 1964, and he's a great guy. And the man who wrote the book just before him, about 15 years before, Eustace Mullins, was a very good friend of mine as well. And although I didn't get to see him very often, but I don't see Ed very often. We just talk on the phone, and he gets my publication. So, and I tell everybody to buy his book. But I'm fearful for him because Soros went out of his way to totally denigrate him as best he could. And the information he had to have come from professional investigation. And Ed may start to get some of the heat that Wayne Madsen and I have gotten in for years. And
That is incredible, because I had heard, obviously, that he was on the Beck Show. I didn't actually see the segment, but I did see the fallout from Media Matters, which, of course, is Soros-run and Soros-funded, Soros-created, supposedly neutral media critique agency on the web. But I saw they were attacking Beck for having Griffin on, but I did not see that Soros himself had talked about Griffin, and that's incredible to hear about. Was that a video that you saw, or was it recorded?
No, it was a statement. But, you know, and I saw it yesterday, and unfortunately, I pitched it, and because we get so much research here, we just can't keep it. And if anybody comes across it, please email it to me, bob@intforecaster.com, and then I'll publish it. I should have published it in tomorrow's issue, but I was just overwhelmed. You know the schedule I've got.
Absolutely. Well, also, I will take a look for it, and I'll let you know. But if anyone out there does find it, you can send it to me or Bob. So absolutely, we'll try to get that out there, because that is incredible to see that Soros is now attacking him individually. Because we all know that.
But it also proves a very good point, and that is these people don't know what to do. They're being forced to do things that they don't want to do. They're having to expedite their programs, and they're not very happy about us breathing down their neck. We are literally killing them, and they can't stop it. I mean, last week I was on a program in Amsterdam and another one in Dublin. These went all over their countries. And in Europe, most people, especially the Dutch, speak English. And so major coverage. And this is happening all the time. So the whole world is listening to us. And we are reaching. And I know that because we get subscribers from everywhere. And what we're doing is the correct thing to do, which is the exposure of what these people are doing and how they have and continue to do what they're doing and why they're doing it.
That's right, and that's because 99% of what they do and what they get away with is simply because people are not paying attention and are not diligent and are not doing their homework on what's really happening, and it's just a magic show, and if we pull away the curtain and we find that there's nothing there, then their game is up, and that's pretty much it. So people who are not taking this information and spreading it around are not doing their part to really bring down this system that's enslaving us.
Well, you know, we have a number of subscribers throughout the world, but in Greece we have several. And I'm getting information that nobody else is getting. And before they had that meeting with President George Papandreou, who is quasi-Marxist, Bilderberger, Illuminist, and his father was a Marxist, incidentally, Anders. But they had a secret meeting, and there was about 50 top Bilderbergers there from Greece. And these people are big hitters. And Papandreou was there. And they were presented with one of the top people from J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs. Now, I got this information from one of our subscribers, who one of the ministers who was there comes from his hometown, and these people have lived next to each other for, you know, the last 30 generations. And so this is straight skinny. And they had this meeting, and what they want to do to back up the bonds, because they're going to get killed on the bonds if there's a default, so they want to make these bonds work, but they want collateralization. And what they want to do is collateralize the bonds with the railway system, gas, electric, the ports, the islands, just about everything the country's got. And of course, it has to be passed by the, I always mispronounce this, the Volji, which is their House of Representatives, our parliament. And Papandreou is 20 votes short of getting that kind of a majority, and people in his own party may desert him because they know if they vote for that, they'll never get elected again. Because any population would go berserk over something like that. and you know, all these famous places like the Pantheon, that's all included. I mean, they want to collateralize the bonds with all of these physical things. And so that's what's going on behind the scenes. And we're into Easter vacation. But after that, when they come back, they're probably going to start discussing it. And it'll be interesting to see if it goes anywhere. But the very temerity of these Illuminists, they say, okay, yeah, we'll give you the money, and it'll take you 50 to 100 years to pay us back, and you live in poverty. And if you don't pay us, we're going to take everything you got.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there you go. That's the system, and that's what we're facing. Well, Bob Chapman, just another incredible talk with just incredible information, because the information is getting crazier and crazier, seemingly by the day. And that's why people need to stay up to date and informed with what's going on. And there are few better sources to go to than the International Forecaster. So tell us a little bit about your newsletter and how people can get a hold of it.
Well, the Forecast is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesday and Saturday by email. It runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the Internet. And everything you need to know every week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com, or you can go to www.intforecaster.com. That's intforecaster.com. For those of you who would like to ask a question, we answer everyone. Want a copy, or would like our latest gold and silver share recommendations, you can email me at bob@intforecaster.com. bob@intforecaster.com. And you can also call toll-free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178, and get a free copy. And for those of you who want to become subscribers, that's a good place to go, because you can get a free subscription there. There's an offer being made, and it's really terrific. So take advantage of it.
Absolutely. I hope people will do that, because as I say, it's important to keep up to date with what's going on as things are getting faster and faster, and the rate of acceleration itself is increasing. Incredible information coming out on a daily basis, as I say. So, Bob Chapman, a pleasure as always. We're going to have to do this again real soon.
Well, thank you, and I await you.